RadioInfluence.com. The future is now.
That I never thought in a million years would happen.
The champion, the challenger, here we go!
This is the MMA Report with Jason Floyd on Radio Influence.
Welcome to the post-Christmas edition of the MMA Report podcast with Daniel Calvon. I am Jason Floyd, and coming up on this week's edition of the show, it is all about UFC 232, as we're going to break this fight card down. Of course, we're going to start off by talking about everything John Jones related, but of course, we'll also talk about this fight card. We got Chris Cyborg, Amanda Nunes for the women's featherweight title. We got Michael Chiesa moving up to 170 pounds, take on Carlos Condit. Also, Chad Mendez against Alexander Volkanovski. That's a matchup I'm definitely looking forward to. So we're going to preview all of this fight card, but fight week really kicked off on Sunday. I was in Dallas. I'm on a plane coming back to Tampa on Sunday, late afternoon, early evening. I immediately crash on the plane and wake up to a text message from Daniel basically saying, hey, you might want to look at what's going on. So that is how I found out about the John Jones situation. Daniel, first off, I appreciate the text message. Give me a little heads up on that one. So how did you find out, man?
Yeah, man, it was just it was the day before Christmas Eve, and that means what that means in Texas is you're watching football because it was a Sunday, and we're watching the Texans game and the Cowboys game, and I knew they were playing the Bucks, and so as I'm in the restroom because obviously it's a Sunday night game, what does that mean, Jason? I ate 30 buffalo wings, so I'm spending a good hour there. I see the news on Twitter. And then I immediately go to text you, and I see that the text message has not delivered. And I look at your Twitter. I'm like, he hasn't tweeted about it. I'm like, oh, Jason doesn't know. So, yeah, it was a crazy news. The second you see it, you know that this is a huge story because it's just one of those things where John Jones having issues with the drug test feels like deja vu. And the absurdity of moving an entire UFC event to a different city in 1 week's notice is so on brand for the UFC in the year 2018.
Not surprised. Not surprised.
Not surprised at all, Jason.
I mean, you know, typically on the planes, we have Wi-Fi, but, you know, a lot of times after a game's over, I lay my head against the window and I just crash. Yeah, so but if I would have been awake, I would have seen your text message, and it was unbelievable. And I think this was kind of for, you know, the people that are haters against John Jones. It's just kind of fuels them. I mean, you know, first off, you feel absolutely awful for the people who had bought tickets, bought plane tickets, bought airfare tickets, all that. I mean, you feel absolutely awful, and I hope the UFC does something besides refunding tickets to make it up to these fans. I mean, that I could not imagine if I was a resident of Sweden. I am coming to Vegas to watch our guy, Alexander Gustafsson, win the UFC light heavyweight title. And God knows how much money he had to spend to fly from Sweden to Vegas and get a hotel and all that. Those are the people that my heart goes out to you. If you bought tickets, airfare and all that, man, my heart goes out to you. Cause I know if I was in your situation, I would be goddamn pissed off.
Oh, if I was coming in from Sweden to watch Gustafsson fight, I would be pissed. Yeah, for sure. I mean, if I was coming from Texas, I would be pissed. I mean, I don't want to drive to Los Angeles. I don't have the means to do it. It's not like the UFC can just pay for transportation for every single person that bought a ticket. That would be really costly. But maybe for the people that came from Europe, you can just look at who came from Europe and do them a solid and pay them their ride there and back. It's not a downside that yeah, the event's gone. At least you can hang out in Vegas. Like, that's better than if the event was in Boise, Idaho. Then they really would have nothing to do but go to Denny's. So, yeah, that's the first thing. You got to feel bad for them. You got to feel bad for the fighters, especially the lower-rung fighters, because obviously this is the huge event in their lives, and it probably costs a lot of money for them to get their families in the city around this time, including airfare and stuff like that. And so that, I think, you got to feel bad for. Yeah, and you got to just feel bad for people looking forward to the event. And it's just one of those situations where it feels like it was the wrong call to move this entire fight card to Los Angeles, simply put, regardless of what your opinion is on the drug test situation, the drug test abnormality with John Jones. I do think it was the wrong call to completely cancel an event with a proven headliner like Christina Cyborg and Amanda Nunes and move this thing to Los Angeles. I know why they did it, and the reason why, I don't know why, but I'm pretty sure the reason why they did it is they wanted to get a John Jones fight in the year so they can add the buy rate to their 2018 numbers. That's why I think they did it.
And I know John Nash kind of brought that point up, and it's a great point. I think it also kind of tells you that the pay-per-view revenue is 1,000 times more important than a gate revenue from the UFC. I mean, look, you feel bad, and you know, from the fighter's aspect, where you feel awful for them is in the terms of, now all of a sudden you've got to pay a higher income tax because the fights are in California, which I know I was listening to Dave Meltzer earlier this week, and he noted that it was between 9-13% higher tax rate than fighting in Nevada. You know, and obviously a lot of fighters came out and said whatever they wanted to say. Corey Anderson, who got a lot of people kind of talking about, you know, had over 3,000 retweets, 13,000 likes on his tweet, where he said, quote, "If we all said no, we won't travel again, they would just take Jones off the card and keep him in Vegas, ? Or book 11 new fights, continue the move to LA, and keep the main event the same. A lot of money has been spent in travel fees for my family to be in Vegas for the fight. I'm not even mad, just disappointing the company I bust my ass for every day, make sure my piss and blood is clean every day, and represent myself like a professional every day for. Just so clowns who sell a lot of tickets and make a lot of money could fuck up every day and still get a pat on the back and told, don't worry, it's not your fault. Because at the end of the day, they sell. I'm currently on my 5-hour flight to Vegas with my wife, who is 7 months pregnant, on the border of not being able to travel, and spend an hour and a half walking through Newark shit show of an airport. Now we have to land to get our stuff, figure out what's next, load up and hassle through the airport and travel again. The law says drive sober or get pulled over. The UFC should be piss clean or hit the streets, even if you make loads of money. But again, I'm not pissed, just highly disappointed." That was Corey Anderson. Now, look, at the end of it, he says, "I'm not pissed, just highly disappointed." Reading the statement, I take it a different way. I also think that this is a situation where, in our society, it is a, when something happens, it is a rush to go to social media to get your side of the story up. If I was representing Corey Anderson or representing another fighter on UFC's 232, I'd sit there and say, "Guys, let's not say anything publicly. Let's have a conversation with the UFC privately. Let's handle this. Let's not put this in a public forum, and let me see what I can do. Maybe I can see that they give us a little bit more money." And so, to me, it just shows that, you know, there's a reason. And maybe this is because I'm a small business owner that I see things a little differently, but there's certain situations where you should be handling it privately instead of publicly, because I look at this statement from Corey Anderson. When his UFC contract is up, you do realize maybe you should do some research on Ari Emanuel, how cutthroat of an agent he is. You think this is not going to be used against you when your contract's up?
Yeah. It, from a cold business perspective, it's probably not a smart move to do that. But I think it shows you that there's a real frustration between the fighters and the organization. It's something where you don't even think to build up the relationship. You don't think to protect your relationship with the UFC at this point. You think to go to social media and complain about it or showcase why you're mad. And Jason, I think if the UFC had a much better relationship with the fighters, we wouldn't see this many instances. I think fighters would think first to communicate with the UFC. But when the UFC doesn't communicate with the fighters before the news breaks, and I understand the reason why, or again, giving them the benefit of the doubt, I think the most logical reason why they didn't tell a lot of the fighters why UFC 232 is moving was because they didn't want the news to leak before they were prepared. So I understand why, but I think still that's signs of organizational cultural failure, in that I think you want to be a part of a culture where you feel like you can trust your employees' information. But when we're dealing with so many employees, I understand. I mean, there are first-time fighters on every card. So for Corey Anderson, it is short-sighted. If you're his agent, I think you're perplexed. But the reason why this is such a big story, Jason, is this isn't just about UFC 232. This isn't just about this event. I feel like it's a wide-ranging, like, examination of the culture of the UFC and how it protects its stars. Because the thing is, I don't know that much about drug testing, about drug – all this stuff. I can't unequivocally say one or the other about the John Jones deal. But I will tell you this. I guarantee you, we would never hear these three words with any fighter on the prelims here. Drug test abnormality. Ryan Hall would never have a headline saying, Ryan Hall got a drug test abnormality. I do not believe we would get that. I don't know. And again, maybe it was a drug test abnormality, but it's weird how all these coincidences only happen with John Jones. It would never happen with Nathaniel Wood.
You can relate this to what Tom Lawler went through, and a Frank Mir statement, which to me is the one that I understand why people are mentioning Tom Lawler's name, but I think if you really look at Frank Mir, because we're talking about the same exact incident, for people who do not see or read what Frank Mir said, he wrote this on his Facebook account on, I want to say it was Sunday. He says, quote, "In the spring of 2016, when USADA representative sat in my Las Vegas kitchen and told me that the turnerball metabolite that they said I tested positive for could only have been ingested within a window of past several months, I vehemently proclaimed my innocence, having never failed any drug test throughout my career. I asked if we could go back further in the past to test any supplements that I could have taken, but they've claimed that was both impossible and unnecessary. They were firm on the assertion that there was only a recent period of several months that would warrant any consideration. Now, a little more than 2 years later, John Jones has tested positive for the same trace of the same banned substance, and USADA is taking a position that the same low level is in fact not a new ingestion, but something that could have been the result of a residual pulsing effect that could potentially stay in the system forever. Further, they are now claiming that the phenomenon is something that they are seeing in other cases as well. The latest shift in USADA's position would seem to suggest one of two possibilities. Either they are A, offering special deposition to John Jones, or B, they are second-guessing and subsequently revising the presentation of their own science. Either scenario leaves myself and a number of other fighters whose careers have been similarly damaged by the testing claims to wonder what it says about USADA's consistency and their test reliability. Sadly, my accusation came at a time when the UFC's partnership with USADA had not been subjected to the kind of doubt that now seems to be further clouded with each new instance of convoluted circumstances." Daniel, I thought that was a very interesting comment by Frank Mir. And there's a lot of things that I want to mention, but in terms of this Frank Mir statement, he brings it up there, and I think it reads the questions: should we have faith with USADA's drug testing program?
It's a difficult question to answer, Jason, because prior to this podcast, prior to this past week, I would answer yes. Like, my general point of view with USADA, Jason, was yes, I have confidence in the drug testing. No, I don't have confidence in their adjudication. But, man, the way Frank Mir laid it out, specifically revising the science, which the thing is, revising your science isn't the worst thing in the world because that's history, right? We've gone from the world is flat to it's round, unless you ask, you know, Kyrie Irving or whatever. So science changes. That's kind of what science, what happens to science. Things evolve, you learn more, etc. So it does make more sense that there's more information out there. But that is a scary thing and an awful thing. If you're someone in Frank Mir's shoes, where just because the science wasn't there yet to prove your case right, you're screwed. So that part sucks. And the thing is, like, I think the biggest, like, the big four words to detail this whole issue, Jason, is, like, benefit of the doubt, and it goes both ways. Frank Mir and all these other fighters who aren't John Jones weren't given the benefit of the doubt in these situations, whereas John Jones was given the benefit of the doubt. And the benefit of the doubt also comes into play, Jason, with how we, the media, and the fans react to this.
I mean, this
do you want to give John Jones the benefit of the doubt here?
I can't give Jones the benefit of the doubt. Just because of everything that has happened. And look, and I've said this before, I am a fan of greatness, and I think John Jones is the greatest fighter of all time. But I look back at all these situations, and I don't know if I can say that anymore. I just don't think we can give John the benefit of the doubt. I mean, look, and to kind of agree with what Corey Anderson said is, look, you have to know as athletes, there are the superstar athletes are going to get away. And like, you know, you mentioned, I mean, name any guy on the prelims. If they were going through what John Jones went through, they wouldn't be fighting on Saturday. But because John Jones is a headliner, and look, and I think this thing's still going to draw very well on pay-per-view, it might draw even better now because of it.
It might. And that brings up an interesting question, too, is like, what's the buy rate going to be for this card, Jason? I mean, this is a strong card.
I would say 400 to 450,000.
Yeah, I could absolutely see that. When I was going to bed last night thinking about this, I was thinking even lower, though. Like, 400 to 450,000 makes all the sense in the world, and that's probably what it's going to be. But I was thinking 350,000, maybe 400,000. But, like, if you put on paper John Jones return fight, Chris Cyborg versus Amanda Nunes, I would be like, oh my gosh, 400, 500,000. John Jones has been a part of some of the biggest pay-per-views in UFC history, and we're having a legit super fight in the history of women's MMA. There has not been a better fight, I think, than Cyborg versus Nunes, and we're getting that fight. But I think that, speaking of larger issues, I feel like the fact that the UFC has one foot out the door on Fox and doesn't have one yet in on ESPN may have hurt Jones versus Gustafsson. I think the lack of, like, I think if they were on ESPN, we would see like a lot of promotion for this fight card on ESPN. It would be a lot. It would be really focused. But I just feel like the focus for promotion hasn't been there for this UFC 232 pay-per-view.
Yeah, to me, it kind of feels like we really haven't seen kind of a lot of media coverage outside of MMA media in terms of the John Jones situation. I do want to play for you what Jeff Nowitzki said on Sunday. Now, this is about a four-minute-long piece of audio that you're going to hear, and you're going to hear exactly what everything Jeff Nowitzki had to say, but also what we're going to do is we're going to kind of talk about Jeff Nowitzki and his role with the UFC.
December 6th, we were notified by USADA that, well, first off, let me say this is regarding John Jones. There's been no violation of the anti-doping program. He is cleared to fight in terms of the USADA program. Mm-hmm. We were notified early this month of an issue that he has had over his most recent tests where a very, very small amount, in fact, I'll describe how small it is, of a long-term metabolite of a substance called DHCMT, dehydrochloromethyltestosterone, also known as oral turinabol, which was the reason for his most recent suspension a year and a half ago, a very, very small amount of a long-term metabolite has shown up in a recent urine sample that was collected from him. USADA fully analyzed it internally. They reached out to outside experts from around the world. They consulted with another professional sports league that is saying that has seen the same issue, and all of them, independent of us, determined that this was not a reingestion of the substance, A, and B, this very, very small amount that was occurring and still showing up, according to these experts, you know, from around the world, did not provide any performance-enhancing benefit. It is not much is known about this long-term metabolite. The parent compound is not approved for human use anywhere in the world, so there's not been any medical studies on it to determine excretion rates, et cetera. But what both USADA and other entities are seeing is that a reoccurrence or potential pulsing, where you'll have multiple negative tests and then a positive one for a very, very low amount, they're seeing that quite commonly over time. And we don't know, nobody knows how long this condition could last. I mean, it could potentially last forever. Not enough is known about this metabolite. The levels that this metabolite is showing up at are in the picogram amounts. A picogram is a 1/1,000,000,000th of a gram. And to kind of get everybody to wrap their head around this, if you put 1 grain of salt on this table and split it up into 50 million pieces, 50 million, a picogram is one of those pieces of that gram of salt. What these levels have shown up in John's system recently are the single and double digit picograms. So such a small amount. And again,
I want to explain to them that even if you could figure out the science on how to microdose that, which you couldn't.
Right.
Right. So, and you can, I invite you guys to look at the Richard McLaren decision. So, you know, it was a published decision, and McLaren, who's one of, you know, the most respected experts in the world, in that decision, that, you know, John's year and a half suspension or 15 month suspension came at, he said, even in that case where, you know, it was a strict liability provision, somehow this got into John's system, but he said there was zero evidence that John would have even used one therapeutic dose back then to reach those levels. And that's what they're continuing to see in these samples. John had, I think, from September, October, November, 4 negative tests. So that they thought, you know, this issue was behind him. But on a most recent sample collection, I think it was December 9th, it showed up again at this very, very low picogram level. Again, I want to reiterate, this isn't the UFC clearing John Jones. This isn't Dana White clearing John Jones. It's not Jeff Nowitzki clearing John Jones. It's USADA and these world-recognized experts who have said, A, there's no evidence of any ingestion of the substance, and B, there's no evidence that this small picogram amount of this long-term metabolite would have any effect on performance enhancement.
And that was Jeff Nowitzki on Sunday talking to the media, and thanks to MMA Junkie for that audio. You know, I think there's a lot of things to kind of ingest there. I mean, obviously, right at the beginning, Daniel, he says, You know, John Jones, it's not an anti-doping violation. He's good to go, all that. Also noting that this was not a UFC decision. It was outside, independent, you know, scientists and all that situation. You know, one of the things I'll say here is I am not going to claim to be an anti-doping expert. You know, when it comes to anti-doping, what I do is I pick up the phone and I start making some calls and try to gather the information that I can, you know. And we had, you know, Scott on Twitter said, isn't it amazing how many PED experts there are on MMA Twitter? And once this came down, it seemed like everyone figured they were a PED expert. But this is what I'll say, and not trying to, you know, look, if you are someone listening to this that has done a lot of performance enhancing and drug, you know, research, I think the one thing you have to understand is, do you believe you know more information on this John Jones drug test situation than Andy Foster and then Jeff Nowitzki and USADA? If you think you know more than they do, you are living in a fantasy world.
Yes, that is so true. That is absolutely so true. And then that begs the question that you want to ask about Jeff Nowitzki, Jason. These guys know more information about it. Do you trust them? With Andy Foster, I trust him. I do. I sometimes I disagree with some of the decisions, like Chuck Liddell Ortiz in California. Like, that one is a big no. But Andy Foster is one of those dudes who, damn, I'm kind of glad he's running a commission because he is transparent. He is not afraid to be a part of the arena. He's not afraid to change the sport for the better. And he, and again, he really communicates well, and you could tell this guy knows his deal. So I like Andy Foster for that. With Jeff Nowitzki, with USADA, I don't trust them, Jason.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things I wrote down is how should we view Jeff Nowitzki? I mean, this is a guy that made his name on Barry Bonds and going through garbage to try to figure out if he was on something. And, but I mean, at the end of the day, look, he gets a paycheck from the UFC. So I think you ultimately, there is going to be those question marks about him. But look, he knows more about anti-doping than a lot of people. And, and you're going to hear from Andy Foster here momentarily. You know, one of the things you said about Andy Foster, and I have to echo it, transparent. There is maybe not another executive director that is as transparent as Andy Foster is. Let's look at the Nevada State Athletic Commission and Bob Bennett. How often do you hear Bob Bennett talking to the media about issues in relation to Nevada Athletic Commission?
I don't know Bob Bennett's voice.
that's a great point. I mean, Sunday they put this statement out, and this was it was signed Bob Bennett. Said today, the Nevada State Athletic Commission Executive Director Bob Bennett announced that in consultation with NSAC Commissioner Chair Anthony Martinello III, unarmed combatant John Jones will be allowed to withdraw his pending applications for a license, which was intended to clear him for a fight in a major contest in Nevada later this month. After extensive analysis of Mr. Jones' prior 18 months of USADA in and out of competition anti-doping drug testing results, Director Bennett, Chairman Marnell, and Mr. Jones had agreed he will appear at a hearing in January. This will allow for a measured, thoughtful, and comprehensive discussion of his anti-doping testing protocol results and provide an opportunity for the NSAC to determine the appropriate path forward for him in Nevada. We look forward to this hearing. This is what I'll say. Look, the commissioners run the Nevada Athletic Commission. Bob Bennett doesn't. That's just a fact, folks. That's a fact. The fact that you couldn't call an emergency meeting when all this goes down. If I am the governor of Nevada, I am calling Bob Bennett in my office and I'm going, please explain to me why you couldn't get an emergency meeting called. We have all this technology in the world. We can FaceTime, we can Skype, we can conference call, we can do all these things, but your commission cannot find time to do this, and now I'm losing millions of tax revenue to another state that's going to sanction a fight. Please explain yourself. And that to me is, I look at the Nevada Commission, I'm going, fellas, I mean, if all of a sudden the state of California is ready to approve this fight and this fight card, you got to be looking at yourself in the mirror on this one going, what the hell is going on here? And it's just, man, I look at Nevada, and I know Joe Rogan went off on them on his podcast, but this is an awful look for Nevada Commission. And if I'm Bob Bennett and I'm the commissioner of that commission, I'm not feeling very good that my appointment by the governor is going to stick in next year.
Yeah. I mean, it's not even like they left you for Texas. You know, they left you for California.
Okay, if it like was that, Texas, I'd be like, okay, all right, I get it.
Yeah.
I mean, look, I've had some good conversations with Big Greg there in Texas, who runs the commission there. But yeah, like if they would have, like that would have been a running joke if this fight was made in Texas.
That's like if they went to if you were dating someone and they broke up with you and then went with that person who's like, you know, they're open for business with anyone who has a pulse. And you're like, all right. But if they leave you and go to that nice looking dude that lives in California and he wants to be an actor, then you feel bad about it. You lost the competition. You know, he goes to California, you lost the competition. And it's not even about the decision that was made. It's the lack of communication and the system in place to deal with this just wasn't there for Bob Bennett. So that's an issue. But the thing is, I don't know anything about the science either, Jason. But I kind of want to talk about it because, correct me if I'm wrong here, but when it comes to – okay, so a couple things. When I listen to that press conference, things are going off in my brain that says BS, BS, BS. Like that one moment in that press conference where like he's like, I don't know if you've heard this previous decision, blah, blah, blah happened versus blah, blah, blah. And like Dana White's in the background like, yeah, I read it. It's like, Dana, shut up. You didn't read it, man. The last thing you read was, you know, Of Mice and Men. Hey, you probably read the Spark Notes. But regardless, here's my big point. It seems like they talk a lot about science. Here are science words. Here are science words. Here are science words. This is why we're right. And don't ask questions. So the picogram range that John Jones tested positive for, they say it's so minute. They provide this example of how it's like 1/1,000,000,000th of a grain of salt or whatever to showcase how small it is, as if to prove that he's innocent. But Jason, here's my big point. Was that not a very similar range to what John Jones originally tested for?
Yeah, I want to say in that – I want to be Aaron Bronster is the one who brought this up in the arbitration hearing Jones had, that it was in the 20 to 80 range, and this one apparently was like in the 60 range. Look, at the end of the day, I'm not an anti-doping expert, but I'm going to rely on what do scientists say, because you know what? They know a million times more information on this. And we got this question from the Creepy Weasel, Steve Montgomery. He said, why didn't the steroids show up in all the previous drug tests? They say because the testing has gotten so much better, but if they've been testing him a lot, how much better has it gotten in the last 4 months that the steroid only shows up now? And Steve, that's a question I have, and I don't know the answer to that question of how all of a sudden, you know, one of the thought process I heard over the past couple of days was, is it because he's weight cutting? And maybe all of a sudden that metabolite shows up more. I don't know. I don't know the answer to the question.
Or maybe it's because he's weight cutting and he used it. Like he got tested positive for roughly the same deal. It's like basically John Jones now, correct me if I'm wrong, has free range to cheat as long as the threshold, unless he only hits, if he hits a very small portion.
If he's taking performance enhancing drugs, he is the dumbest doper in the history of all sports.
But here's the thing. We can't do that. We can't play the – he wouldn't do this because he's a dummy, because the history of this sport is dummies.
Oh, yeah.
Before USADA, it was really easy to not get caught, and people still did.
We mentioned about the transparency of Andy Foster. And Andy will talk to you. I mean, look, I can pick up the phone. I can get Andy on the phone. He'll, you know, I'm not going to call him at, you know, 8 o'clock East Coast time because, you know, that's 5 a.m. out in California. But he was on Sirius XM this weekend. I want to play you exactly what he said. You're going to hear the question that R.J. Clifford asked him and his response.
Is the science that black and white, Andy, where finding that substance as they did, even though the last three drug tests they found nothing, clearly unequivocally means he's not taking anything now, and this is due to something he took 18 months ago. Is the science that black and white? Is it that clear?
Well, I mean, I don't think you've got all the facts. Okay. So I wouldn't say that those last three drug tests were that the substance didn't appear.
It was never reported, but, right? So one of two things happened. Either there was nothing in there, or USADA didn't release the fact that it was, right? I mean, those are the only two options.
Well, I mean, I just think it's important for you to have to not, you know, when we're talking about John Jones, let's not report this incorrectly, okay? The metabolite, John Jones is going to have this M3 metabolite, according to scientists, not me, according to scientists, this can be in your system for a long, long time. And this thing it happens to hang around, and obviously in incredibly, incredibly low levels. And this is important. This is where it gets down in kind of the weeds. There are several kinds of metabolites for this substance. There's the short-term metabolite, and that's kind of where you look for and you say, wow, this guy's doping. Mm-hmm. And then there's the long-term metabolite, and there's several of them from what I understand, but this particular one hangs around the longest. And this is the one that keeps you know, that looks, you know, that we've kind of at very, very low levels. And this is the important thing. The Salt Lake City lab director, Dr. Eichner, said this is not new ingestion. Put it in writing.
Okay.
I mean, so think about what that means. You have the premier doping expert on the planet saying this is not new ingestion.
Okay, and that sounds, and that's definitely good for John Jones's case. And again,
and that it's not performance enhancing.
And the end of that, Daniel, is really what sticks out to you is when you've got a scientist saying this is not something, a new ingestion of it. And look, as we've said, we're not experts in this. All we can do is, you know, sit there, read, listen. And to me, you listen to Andy Foster, and look, I understand there's going to be people come down to Andy Foster. But if you think you know more about Andy Foster on this drug testing situation, you are living in a goddamn fantasy world.
Yeah, it's just, I mean, it is something he is just ingrained in every day as we go and do our normal jobs. That's his actual job.
I mean, it's just, you know, there is information he knows that is not public knowledge. I mean, that happens in business all the time. There's things that happen that are just, you know, it's handled, you know, behind closed doors that just, I'm sure there's something that we don't know about. You know, I saw people saying, oh, how could a drug test get back so quickly? It's called, you expedite it and you pay the lab a lot of money and magically you can get in the front of the line.
Absolutely. That's how that works. And it's like, when you say a drug expert from Salt Lake City came to the conclusion and put it in writing that this was not a new ingestion, that's when you begin to have confidence in John Jones's case, when you get that situation. But the thing is, that's interesting. Me hearing, you could tell this was a long-term metabolite. I mean, I'm interested in that, how you tell the difference. That would make sense of why you come to that decision. If there's a difference between so you can determine that this is evidence of not being a new ingestion. What I don't like is low levels. When I hear them say low levels, that to me seems like BS, because again, he tested for the same levels. And there's a reason why there's not a threshold for performance enhancing drugs. There's a threshold for pot, but there really isn't for steroids, because it's like, if you catch them, you got them. Because I mean, that stuff leaves your system very fast. And if you just catch a trace of it, it's not like, you know, it just popped up in your hamburger. Although I guess if you're eating in Mexico, it does. So that low levels, I don't like those two words. But if you can determine that it was a long-term metabolite and it wasn't a new ingestion, that's when we're cooking with peanut oil and we're going to start building a case for John Jones. With that being said, transparency is a big deal. A lot of the information that isn't public information should be public information, unless there's, you know, OSHA laws or whatever. Because the thing is, this is a battle that's going to be fought in the public eye, Jason. And the public is going to be skeptical of those allowing John Jones to fight, because this whole situation is geared towards getting that fight inside the cage, because it makes a lot of money.
Hey, look, this is what I'll say. You want to know what this situation has really made me even more that we need to see?
What's that?
Jones Cormier. like, did you see the two of these guys going back and forth on Instagram?
Yeah, man.
I mean, just like, oh my God. It's just one of these things of like, if I am Dana White, I am going, I got to figure out a way to get these two guys in the cage together, because, you know, it's just, I mean, now you're talking about each other's wives' asses. I mean, come on. Like, these two guys, there is too much money on the table to not have this fight happen.
So here's a question, Jason. If John Jones loses, do we still see Cormier versus Jones?
Oh, you have to. Because the fact, look, I don't, first off, I don't think Cormier's ever coming back to 205. First off, you know, and look, and I guess we do got to kind of transition to the actual fight. I mean, you feel bad for Alexander Gustafsson, even though I think he's handled himself pretty well in all this situation. You know, I just, I still like John Jones to win the fight. I mean, you can go to MMAreport.com right now and you can watch that first fight. It was a close fight, but I still thought John Jones won the fight. It is kind of crazy for how great of a fight it was that it's taken us 5 years to get to this, and there's various reasons. I mean, you look at Jones and the issues he's had. You look at Alex and the injury situations and some of you think about the Rumble loss. You know, it amazes me. It's taken us this long. And I think there's so many questions about this fight that we just don't have answers on. You know, take the drug testing part of this out of it. Just from the actual fight aspect, we haven't seen John Jones in over 2 years. Gustafsson, what Alexander Gustafsson's going to show up?
Mm-hmm. We have seen him fight like a Super Saiyan, and we have seen him fight. I mean, the last time we saw him fight, he looked like a killer against Glover Teixeira. That was May 2017, and the thing is, like, it's funny to think about it this way, but Alexander Gustafsson has spent more time away from the cage than John Jones.
Think about this. He has not fought two times in a year since 2015. I mean, like, you think about this. The John Jones fight he had at UFC 165 was September 21st, 2013. You know any fights he's had since then?
Four fights.
Five.
Five fights.
He had the knockout against Jimmy Manuel. Then he had the TKO loss against Rumble. The split decision loss against Cormier. Then he had the decision win against Jan Blachowicz. And the knockout win against Glover Teixeira.
As Mike Goldberg would say, the ring rust between these two are virtually identical, you know.
I mean, I think that it's for John, I really feel like closing the distance is going to be a big thing to where I feel like if this is a far range, even though John's got a big reach, I feel like Gustafsson can score some points. But I look at this fight and I just... You know, and there's a lot of uncertainty with John Jones, but John Jones is my pick. And I think John Jones is going to win by stoppage.
I think it's going to be a fantastic fight. There are so many questions, and it just comes down to what your gut feeling is, really. There's not a whole lot of analysis here. Alexander Gustafsson is a wonderful, wonderful stand-up fighter. This guy will batter most people. John Jones is a guy who we saw in his career evolve from fight to fight, go from a guy that went from an underdog somewhat on the feet to an absolute monster with his elbows, inventing things inside the cage. The thing is, like, it's hard to determine where these guys are at and as we close out the year 2018 as mixed martial artists. I mean, in a situation like this where you have a guy like John Jones returning to the cage, a legend. A lot of times those guys lose to the next generation, like Jose Aldo taking on a Max Holloway or whatever. But he's not taking on the next generation. He's taking on his own generation, Alexander Gustafsson. So, you know, a lot of times these guys are gone for a while, maybe they lose a step and the guys under him jump over him. So we don't have that situation here. My gut feeling, though, is Alexander Gustafsson is going to win this fight because Gustafsson, to me, is just an absolute killer. There's a reason Daniel Cormier doesn't want to fight him. I mean, there's two reasons. One is he doesn't draw money. Two is he's really hard to fight. You know, you fight him, and then you immediately want to go to a therapist. It was that big of a war. So I just think his stand-up is going to be completely on point. The second thing with John Jones, even though both of them have been away from the cage for a while, Jason, and John Jones, again, he is one of the greatest fighters I've ever seen fight. When he was absolutely in his prime defending the light heavyweight championship, he was, to me, I didn't think there was another human being on the planet that could beat him. But my big issue with John Jones is his mental focus. I feel like he has just been pulled in 100 different directions, whereas Alexander Gustafsson has been able just to hone in on this. This, for Alexander Gustafsson, is the biggest moment of his life. For John Jones, this is one stepping stone to a bigger paycheck. So the focus, I think, is going to come into play here, and it's why I think Gustafsson is going to upset John Jones.
So the betting odds are pretty identical in the main event and co-main event. So Gustafsson's plus 235. Amanda Nunes is plus 230. Do you have more faith in Gustafsson winning or Amanda Nunes?
Gustafsson, but I think Nunes might win that fight too. Actually,
I was watching Embedded, and it just I don't know if the UFC. Well, actually, I will say this: I think the UFC's done a horrible job of promoting this fight. You know, and I understand why everything's been about Jones Gustafsson leading up to this one, but I feel like they've just kind of missed the boat on really promoting what this fight is. I mean, you look at, you know, man, Nunez is, you know, just, you know, I mean, look, go down her record. I mean, and she wins this. There's clearly a claim for her being the greatest women's fighter of all time. And of course, you look at Chris Cyborg. I mean, she's Chris Cyborg. To me, she is the greatest women's fighter of all time. But it's just, I feel like, I don't know, there's something about Amanda Nunes in this one that I just kind of like, I feel like I'm like, I think people are counting her out.
You know why? Because you've seen her against the best fighters in the bantamweight division.
Dude, I was watching, they put her fight against Ronda Rousey on the UFC YouTube channel, and I watched that thing again. I think we sometimes forget how brutal of a beatdown that was.
Amanda Nunes made
her hands down and was like, and Rousey had no idea what hit her.
Amanda Nunes made Ronda Rousey go like, I want to do this, but where they let me win. You know, that's how big of a beatdown it was. And Amanda just stone cold killer wins over Shevchenko, Pennington, Rousey, Tate, Sarah McMahon. And if you look at Cyborg's resume, it's not, she hasn't had the opportunity to beat similarly skilled fighters in her weight class because they don't exist.
Yeah, I mean, this is the thing about, like, you know, Cyborg in this one, and why, to me, as the fight goes on, if this thing hits the fourth or fifth round, you kind of like Nunes.
That's the yeah. As it goes on, you have more confidence in Nunes maybe bringing Cyborg down just so she can unload ground and pound. And steal rounds. I mean, I think, again, like, the physical aspects of this fight, it's pretty point in black and white. Physically, Cyborg's going to be the bigger fighter. It's one of the rare instances where Nunez is going to be in the cage and the punching power isn't on her side. Speed-wise, volume-wise, pace-wise, Amanda Nunez has the advantage. I mean, this is a phenomenal fight. I mean, for 10 years, we've been looking forward to a fight like this in the career of Cyborg. For Chris Cyborg, we have been looking for Chris Cyborg to take on somebody that makes the fight interesting, where the odds are somewhat close, to validate her as the best female fighter on the planet. We wanted it versus Rousey. We wanted it versus Carano, and we got it, but we realized Gina wasn't that great. This is finally the instance where Chris Cyborg can prove herself, validate herself, and shut the door on being the best female fighter of all time. But I think she's going to lose this fight because, again, watching both of their careers lately, both of their past five fights, inside the cage, Amanda Nunes appears to me to be the better multidimensional fighter.
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm picking Chris Cyborg just because it's just tough for me to go against Chris, but it wouldn't surprise me. Now, I will tell you this. Let me see if you agree with me on this one. The number three fight on this card is Chad Mendez versus Alexander Volkanovski.
I agree with you, Jason. I do. That's a phenomenal Joe Silva fight on steroids.
Here's the question mark for you. If Volkanovski wins by knockout, is he your next title challenger?
I think so. I think he does have momentum to go for it. The problem is, like, he's not, like, you know, people don't know who Volkanovski is, but if he gets that knockout victory, maybe they will. I mean, the only people that beat Chad Mendes are named Conor McGregor, Jose Aldo, and Frankie Edgar. And Chad looked awesome in his return to the cage against Miles Jury. So I think Chad's going to beat Volkanovski. This is just a dramatic step up from Darren Elkins to, like, the featherweight version of Joseph Benavidez, Chad Mendes. Dramatic step up. But, again, I think Chad Mendes is going to get the win here. But if Volkanovski goes out there, lays waste to Chad Mendes, even though he's not a huge draw currently, not a superstar, people want to identify him other than he's really buff in a Walmart. Yeah, absolutely. Write a check. Write his name in pen. He gets a title shot. I just don't think he's going to beat Mendes.
I'd say the other two fights on the pay-per-view, Condit Chiesa, Latifi, Anderson. Condit Chiesa, I'm like, oh, man. I mean, it's tough for me to really get excited about that. I look at Michael Chiesa, and to me, he's a guy that really needs a 165-pound weight class. I think it's very clear that, you know, you look at Carlos Condit, and he's searching for his first win since May 30th, 2015. The fact of you look at this run he's been on since 2012, November of 2012 when he lost to GSP. He's only won two fights since then against Martin Campman and Thiago Alves. Aleir Latifi, Corey Anderson, I feel like this is a little bit of a showcase fight for Aleir Latifi.
Yeah, I mean, a little bit for sure, but I think Corey Anderson might even win that fight, Jason. I'm going with the dogs on Saturday.
What's the path to Corey Anderson winning?
I think for Corey Anderson, this is a pretty simple situation where you have got to evade what Latifi brings on the ground, and you've got to stay.
He's not scoring a take. I don't think he's scoring a takedown.
You don't think he's scoring? You don't think so?
I think he's got a fight range.
That would present issues. I mean, don't get me wrong. Latifi is a hard to take down, but I feel like. The thing is, you play at range, you're putting yourself in a position to get knocked out. And I don't necessarily – I mean, I could see if he plays it really safe and keeps it a boring fight where he's just trying to outstrike him, boom, there you go. But I feel like if Corey Anderson closes the distance – I know Latifi's really strong, and he's kind of nasty in the clinch. But I think Anderson has the physical ability to manhandle him somewhat.
Yeah, but that's just, you know, those two fights, it's not really, they're not fights that truly interest me.
Carlos Condit should retire. I mean.
If he loses, I don't know how there's someone not around him saying it's time to go.
I love him, too.
Now, I'll tell you this. In terms of
got a transition point there.
In terms of underdogs in this card. Why would I sit there if I was in Vegas, put a $100 bet on BJ Penn?
Because you don't like Ryan Hall as a fighter, I guess.
I look at that line, and I don't – I mean, look, I understand why Ryan Hall is a big favorite. But, man, yeah. Could you really place a bet on Ryan Hall at minus 470?
No. No, I wouldn't place – I would stay away, man. I mean, like, BJ Penn needed to retire seven fights ago, and that's not even a joke. That's not even a hyperbole. That just needs to happen. So the good thing is he's not taking on a striker is all I can say. Ryan Hall is going to go out there and go with a flying knee knockout on poor BJ Penn.
But BJ's going to win it here.
Yeah, yeah. If he's going to win, it's going to be against a grappler.
Dude.
That's it.
November 20th, 2010.
So last time he won?
Last time he won a fight.
Dude, it's almost been a decade. It's
Matt
literally
Hughes,
been 9
UFC
years.
UFC 123.
Does BJ Penn have a win over a guy who is still fighting?
Diego Sanchez.
Wow. Yeah, that's a good call. I should have thought about that before I even asked the question. I'm pretty sure Kao Uno somewhere is fighting somewhere in Japan. But, yeah, dang. And then Henzo Gracie might be fighting somewhere.
Yeah, Henzo might be Takanori Gomi probably. And Ryzen.
Yeah, it's Gomi is for sure.
But, I mean, you're talking about you beat Gomi in 2003.
Yeah, man. That was
look, you were if you are an old-school MMA fan, you're going to be rooting for BJ Penn on Saturday night.
Oh, yeah. I mean, if you're an old-school MMA fan, you got plenty of guys to root for. You root for Andre Arlovsky.
I mean, look, on the prelims, I'll circle out two fights that have me interested. One on the FS1 prelims and one on the Fight Pass prelims. Kat Zingano versus Megan Anderson and Uriah Hall versus Bevon Lewis. Those are two prelim fights that I sit there and say, I want to make sure I'm watching those two fights.
Mm-hmm. Oh, Anderson Zingano to me is like, that should be the main event of the prelims. I just think that's just the most interesting fight on the prelims.
You know why Arlovski Harris is a featured prelim because that fight's most likely not making it out of the first round.
But if it does, we are due for a crappy fight. We are due. If that fight goes three rounds, Jason, half the audience is asleep. Which, by the way, I just want to give a shout out there, to my girlfriend who said that she was having trouble sleeping, Jason. And the only way she goes to sleep is listening to the podcast. So shout out to her. Dude, I'm kind of excited about, one, I think Douglas and Josh Peter Yan will just be an interesting fight. Like, it'll be fun to watch. And a fight that, like, matters is, like, Curtis Millender versus Sihir Bahadurzada. Like, Curtis Millender isn't necessarily, like, the sexiest name in the UFC's welterweight division. But I do think these are two welterweights who have really proven themselves in the UFC, and it's, like, been a very long time since either one of these. I mean, Millender I don't think has ever lost in the UFC. I could be wrong there. And Sihir hasn't lost since, like, 2013. So that fight's somewhat interesting. That's kind of hidden on the prelims.
You got Kelleher Jackson kicking off the prelims on Fight Pass at 6:30 p.m. Eastern. Also, Nathan Wood versus Andre Uhl. That's one that sticks out to you. You know, Orlovsky, Walt Harris. I mean, look, you know why that's a featured prelim. You know, but Bavon Lewis, just, you know, you're just really interested to kind of see, you know, you do with him, you wonder, you know, is he being rushed into the UFC? And obviously, Uriah Hall, I mean, I guess Uriah Hall's kind of gatekeeper status at this point.
I guess so, against the extraordinary gentleman.
I mean, look, Bavon Lewis, if you just saw him as a fighter, you didn't know his name, you'd probably go, is that John Jones's brother?
That is the highest compliment if we're talking about inside the cage. I mean,
yeah, inside the cage, yes.
Yeah, I mean, he looked great on the Contender Series, man. I almost feel like the dude should have got a contract like his first fight in. But the thing is, he is just going to destroy people with his reach, with how rangy he is. And you're right, Lewis Uriah Hall, that is a phenomenal fight. I mean, six fights in your professional MMA career, you get Uriah Hall. That is a lot to chew, but you know, hey, John Jones got a tough test. I mean, early on in his career, so maybe he'll pass it just like Jones.
Now, of course, this all goes down on Saturday night. I'll be tweeting away, going over to a buddy's house. A bunch of the fellas going to come over and watch the fight. So looking forward to it. Before we do the show in the new year, January 2nd, we do have Ryzen. We've got PFL. I'm more interested in Ryzen. Even though we don't know where things are going to be broadcast, apparently, you know, rumor is this fight's going to have it. But I'm much more interested in the Ryzen card than I am the PFL championships.
Is that because John Fitch didn't make the championships?
No. Well, John Fitch, A, is in Bellator. But B, okay. It's because of Caldwell and Horiguchi.
Listen, man.
There is not another fight on the PFL championships that even is... I would consider on par with Horiguchi Caldwell.
I'm sorry for getting John Fitch mixed up with Jake Shields. Although I promise I'm not the first one. Yeah, look. Well, the thing is, I love the New Year's Eve spectacle in Japan. I do. Mm-hmm. So, like, that's why I'm more biased. Also, it's like, I mean, they're running up against nothing in America when this card's happening. So I'm looking forward to that. I'm looking at the Wikipedia. So, man, that Floyd Mayweather fight's still on, huh?
Yeah, it's still on. Because the betting odds only have him as a -340 favorite on Bovada.
Who fights? Who's more likely to not fight? Floyd Mayweather or Gabby Garcia?
Ooh, probably Floyd. Just because all of a sudden, you know, hey, you know, maybe he's supposed to get paid before. I mean, like, I look at the PFL. So you've got, you know, you got Ray Cooper against Magomed Karamov in your welterweight playoff. Now you got Philippe Williams versus Josh Copeland in the heavyweights, Vinny Magulace versus Sean O'Connell. Kayla Harrison's on that fight card as well. You got Nathan Schultz against Rashid Magomedov, Steven Seiler versus Lance Palmer. And Magomedov versus Taylor. In terms of the PFL, the fight that to me sticks out, and to me it should be the main event of that fight card. I'm not sure which is the main event of the fight card. To me, it would be Steven Seiler or Lance Palmer.
Yeah, that to me is absolutely the most interesting fight when it comes like when it comes to competition. I'm looking forward to that one the most. Seiler Palmer, when you get your 1 and 2 seed in the tournament, I think Ray Cooper's fight should be high up there just because I feel like when you look at every tournament, he's the guy who I think made the most statements throughout the year. So, yeah, that PFL card is good. But you are right when you say the fact that the fight of New Year's Eve is called with Horiguchi. I mean, there's nothing PFL has that comes close to that fight. So, Palmer-Sayo is a good fight, but it's not Horiguchi versus Caldwell.
Yeah, I mean, also you got Darren Cruikshank against Damian Brown is a name you'll hear from. You know, but it'll be interesting to see what the broadcast details are. I mean, look, if that Caldwell Horiguchi fight is like, you know, I don't know, starts at like 6:30, 7 o'clock in the morning, I'm tuning on. If I hop on MMA Twitter and I see the fight hasn't started yet, I'll fork over the money just to watch that fight.
Yeah, man, me too. I will too. I mean, I'm looking forward to that fight a lot.
Yeah, I mean, it's also something I didn't mention about UFC 232 and the fact of it now being at the former Inglewood. You know, Bellator's got to be pissed, right?
Because of the relationship they built there.
Well, the fact of you got a card there in what 4 weeks? How much you have to wonder? You know, I don't see it affecting ticket sales for your upper level, you know, cheaper tickets that are probably, you know, 30, 40, 50 bucks, whatever. But you got to imagine having Jones Gustafsson now at the Forum, you know, 4 weeks from your event could hurt selling those high price tickets, those floor seats.
Yeah, people can't be spending that much money on MMA every single month.
Yeah, I mean, I have to imagine that. When Scott Coker heard that news, he was like, "You MFers."
Yeah, I think so.
Like that was like one of the thoughts I had was like, "Man, how much is this going to affect Bellator's ticket sales?"
I think those high-rise tickets. Yeah, it's. I mean, at the end of the day, if you're a fan, what are you going to want to watch more, John Jones or Bellator? The answer is
the Bellator card is amazing.
Yeah,
but if you sat there and said, "Jason, you can pay," I think that the expensive ticket for the Jones fight is $300. Maybe it's a little more. If you tell me, let's just say it's $400. If you say you can go see UFC 232 for $400, or you can see Bellator 214 for $400, I'm picking UFC.
Yeah, as great as just because of card.
You know, really the 1-2 punch combination the UFC has. I mean, I love that Bellator 214 card. It's a great fight card. But man, I do feel bad for Bellator because they're probably going to lose out on some ticket sales. I mean, you look at that main card. I mean, obviously people will point to Fedor against Ryan Bader. You got you know, we'll see if Rafael Lovato Jr. stays on the fight card. Gegard Mousasi pulled out of the event due to injury. But you got Pico and Corrales. I mean, that's a great featherweight matchup. You got the MMA debut of Jake Hager, aka Jack Swagger. You've also got the Ricky Bandejas versus Juan Archuleta fight, which is a great fight at 35 as Archuleta moves down to 35. But yeah, it's are you interested in Jake Hager?
I'm
not quite sure.
I'm more interested in him.
I'm fascinated in a way, but I don't know how interested I am in that.
I'm more interested in him as a pro wrestler. Yeah. I'm sure. Look, he's got a wrestling background. I think he'll be good as an amateur. I think he's going to win his fight, but we'll see. We'll see how he looks.
Yeah, it'd be interesting, but definitely looking forward to Saturday night, UFC 232. Of course, be sure to follow myself and Daniel on Twitter at Jason_Floyd. Daniel's at Daniel Galvan, DGG. Hopefully, you had a good Christmas. Have a safe and happy New Year. And we'll be back next Wednesday for another edition of the MMA Report podcast, which you can always hear on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, Google Play, and RadioInfluence.com.
This is a cannabis podcast powered by Trulieve. Quick fix on Radio Influence.
Now, with marijuana growing and growing and growing and growing every single day, what we wanted to do is, first and foremost, improve our economy. And it is definitely doing that. I was looking up some different information, and there's a lot of new jobs that are being created by cannabis every single day, every single week in this country. In 2020, you know, $8.5 billion is supposed to be the projection of 2020 of the marijuana industry. And they're going to create 250,000 new jobs. Now, those are big numbers. 250,000 new jobs in any country is a lot of jobs.
The Cannabis Podcast, powered by Trulieve, can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and RadioInfluence.com.